Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Forget the wins, forget the losses. Football is a business. You know, blown calls and bottom lines on the broadcast today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Tuesday, the 25th of September. Great, as always, to have you with us. Okay, confession number one, I didn't actually see the Packers-Seahawks game last night. Confession number two, I'm a New York Giants fan, so the prospect of the Packers losing on a simultaneous catch...
Millie,
we're on the air here.
Wait a minute.
All right, Millie Jefferson, ladies and gentlemen, the director of the broadcast.
Look, first of all, simultaneous catch... My, you know what? Clearly the Packers player jumped up higher and caught the ball. I mean, to rob Green Bay of a win and on Monday Night Football, the NFL needs to stop holding our seasons hostage with these refs and their bungled calls.
All right, Millicent, last time I checked, this was Marketplace, not ESPN. So we'll get to the nub of the story here for us. Here's Chrissy Clark with the dollars behind the catch.
First, the call sparked this moment.
Seahawks win in the most bizarre finish you'll ever see.
Now there's the aftermath. With only 16 regular season games, every game counts, and losing just one could cost the Green Bay Packers millions.
It could impact the chances of a team making or not making the playoffs, or whether it gets home seating, whether it will host a game.
That's Michael McCann, director of the Sports Law Institute at Vermont Law School.
Money for luxury boxes, concessions, there's local sales, the benefits of selling parking spots.
Then there are also the estimated hundreds of millions of dollars at stake with on- and offshore betting. At least one online sportsbook refunded all their customers who bet on the Packers. And there's another dimension to last night's call. The guys who made it are replacement refs. The NFL has locked out the regular referees as part of a big labor dispute. Bob Bruno is a labor relations professor at the University of Illinois. He says moments like last night's can remind people how valuable experienced refs are to the game.
For those folks who feel supportive of the referees, this is exactly what they've been waiting for, an NFL game blown by a call.
But sports industry analyst Eben Joes says the NFL brand is so strong and viewership so high, the team owners still may not have any financial incentive to give the refs what they want.
Whether or not people want to admit it, they're still watching the games.
And ratings are better than ever. I'm Chrissy Clark from Marketplace.
Millie Jefferson, by the way, she's our resident Packers fan, in case you couldn't tell. All right, moving on. For those who are bored with Facebook, and really, who isn't by now, there is a newish alternative, a social networking site that lists among its investors none other than Justin Timberlake. It's called MySpace. Yeah, JT is trying to bring sexy back online. MySpace has been under new management for a little over a year. It's had a facelift. It seems pretty popular. It's in limited testing right now. As yet unknown, though, is whether the site can recapture any of its long-lost former glory. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
There are plenty of once popular websites working hard to maintain their relevance.
Yahoo!
And MySpace isn't the only former powerhouse now struggling to deliver.
You've got mail.
You've got mail. You've
the history of the Internet hasn't been kind to sites trying to make a comeback. Remember Napster, for example? Best Buy gave up on trying to turn the file-sharing site into a streaming music service after disappointing results. Greg Sandoval follows digital media for CNET.
I mean, I've never seen it yet. Lots and lots of companies have bought these brands and tried to leverage them and bring them back, and I haven't seen one come back.
MySpace is aiming to refashion itself as a slick destination for emerging musicians to get exposure and stay in touch with their fans. Sandoval doesn't rule out a slim chance that strategy may work.
Justin Timberlake is an entertainment phenomenon. You never know what somebody like him can do, right? He can reach multiple audiences and bring a lot of attention to the site.
At the research firm GigaOm, tech analyst Michael Wolff says it'll be an uphill battle against Facebook. He also points out that Facebook's popularity means it can't make changes as dramatically as MySpace, which has only a tiny fraction of Facebook's global audience.
You don't want to alienate that large installed user base. And that's one of the things that MySpace has in its advantages. They can take swings for the fences.
In the end, that may be all it is. This is the fourth major overhaul of MySpace, and CNET Sandoval says if it weren't for the star power of one of its backers, most people would just write MySpace off, as many already have. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
No sexy back tall on Wall Street today. Traders did have some mojo early on, but then they lost it and a bit more as well. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Before Congress left town last week to go home and campaign, Republicans in the House of Representatives passed something called the Buffett Rule Act of 2012. Lest you think the GOP signed on to a millionaire's tax, which is what the actual Buffett Rule is, they didn't. The version passed by the House would let people volunteer to pitch in a little bit more on their tax bill. There are already ways to do that, though. The one in the news of late is to do what Mitt Romney did last year and not deduct some charitable contributions. Bruce Bartlett, a former official in two Republican administrations, it should be said, wrote about the illogic of all of this for the New York Times economics blog today. It's good to have you with us.
Happy to be here.
Is this, in your mind, where the Republicans have gotten themselves on tax increases, given that they seem to have hemmed themselves in, right? They can't talk about it. They can't vote for it. So now they're counting on people to do it themselves.
Well, that's right. One way they have responded is say, look, if Warren Buffett or anybody else is concerned that the rich are not paying enough taxes, they're free to send a check to the Treasury. And now they seem to have decided that this is really their official response to any arguments that are made that revenues need to rise to deal with the deficit.
To be clear, you have been able, we as citizens, in fact, everybody, can write a check to the government anytime they like. I mean, that policy goes back to like the 1840s or something, you say.
That's right. The Treasury has a fund. They've gotten about $7.5 million so far this year, which is actually quite a bit more than they usually get. A little bit of money does come in.
Every year.
Every year.
Wow.
It's usually more in the $3 or $4 million range. But like I said, it's been a little bit higher this year for some reason.
It kind of stands to reason that if you're going to have this little check-off box on your tax returns that says, I want to pay more, and you point this out, that you might have a check-off box on the applicable forms that say, you know, I don't need my Social Security payment. I don't need Medicare. I don't need, my farm subsidy or whatever.
Well, that would certainly seem logical if the idea is that we are to make personal voluntary contributions to deficit reduction. Why should it be only on the tax side? There's certainly any number of people who are pretty well-to-do who draw Social Security and benefit from other government programs. If the Republicans are serious about this being a serious way to deal with deficit reduction, maybe that should be done as well.
Is this any way to have a rational discussion about the admitted deficit problem that we have in this country?
Obviously, no. Our deficit problem is in the trillions. The most that voluntary taxes or voluntary non-taking of benefits is going to add up to is in the millions of dollars, perhaps the low billions. In the long run, you have to have broad-based taxation, the federal income tax, the payroll tax. Those are the mainstays of financing government, and all this is just political,
Yeah, we can't say it on the radio.
Whatever it is. That's right, BS.
Yeah. What about you? Do you ever write a check to this gift fund that the United States has?
No, if I were inclined to write a check, it would be to the Salvation Army, and I'll deduct the charitable contribution.
Bruce Bartlett writes for the economics blog at the New York Times. Mr. Bartlett, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
In one corner, the multi-billion-dollar Great Lakes fishing and tourism industries. In the other, a fish, a bony and most unwelcome fish known as the Asian carp. Sometime in the next couple of weeks, the Army Corps of Engineers is set to tell Congress how it plans to keep the invasive carp out of the Great Lakes. But as you know, one person's unwelcome guest is another person's business opportunity. Adam Allington has that story from St. Louis Public Radio.
When the French explorer Père Marquette traveled down the Illinois River in 1673, his journal tells of encounters with monstrous fish, so large they nearly overturned his canoe. In all likelihood, the fish Marquette was talking about were channel catfish. But nearly 340 years later, fisherman Josh Haven says another monster now harasses boaters on the Illinois, the Asian carp.
Oh, everybody hates them. Except for people that shoot them and stuff like that. I hate them when I'm trying to tube with my kids, but then when we're trying to shoot them, I like them. So it's a love-hate thing.
Bow fishing for jumping carp may be fun, but the sheer volume of carp, which average around 40 pounds, is crowding out native fish. So much, in fact, that in parts of the river, 8 out of every 10 fish is an Asian carp. Originally from China, fish farmers in the South began importing Asian carp in the 1970s to help clean their commercial ponds. The fish have since spread up the Mississippi and tributaries like the Illinois. They're an ecological threat, to be sure, but some are starting to see them as an asset.
We should be thinking about the invasive species as opportunities to focus on economic development.
Mark Miller's the director of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Speaking recently to residents in the tiny river town of Grafton, Illinois, just northeast of St. Louis, Miller says he's bullish on carp in part because of new companies like Grafton's American Heartland Fish Products, which hopes to start processing and selling carp later this year.
I mean, who else can take lemons and turn them into lemonade like providing an opportunity for 39 jobs here in this community? That's what we're doing with the Asian carp.
Carp are considered too bony for American tastes, but they're wildly popular in China, where pollution's made many fish unsafe to eat. Demand for carp has lured Chinese investors to the U.S. to strike export deals. Investor Liu Shuwu was also on hand in Grafton to announce a partnership with American Heartland to ship 35 million pounds of carp to China over the next 3 years.
And I want to thank the mayor and the American Heartland Fish.
Speaking through an interpreter, Liu thanked the community for the investment opportunity. The fish caught here will be marketed as Upper Mississippi wild-caught carp, with so much energy they can jump.
Thank you.
So far, however, Chinese demand hasn't necessarily meant profits for U.S. producers.
You just absolutely can't make any money. The margins are too close.
Steve McNitt is the sales manager for Schaefer Fish in northwest Illinois. He says Schaefer experimented with selling carp to China, but at 45 cents per pound, the price was too low to cover costs and turn a profit.
I'm telling you the truth, there is absolutely no way you can do it for that kind of money, even if they gave you the fish, the fishermen, but they have to be paid. You know, it's quite expensive to fish.
Economics aside, many ecologists also warn that building an industry on the backs of an invasive species might only further establish the carp in American rivers. But Ben Allen of American Heartland Fish says he expects to not only control the population of carp, but ultimately to beat it back.
We want to move these fish out of the river, and we're going to attract people that have large boats and that want to go out and work hard and bring in a lot of weight.
Allen doesn't see China as the sole market for his carp. He says new rendering technology will also allow his company to tap into the booming trade for fish meal used in animal feed and omega-3 fish oil. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Marissa Meyer released her Yahoo turnaround plan today. The CEO of that company has already given employees free lunches and free smartphones as a way to boost morale, which did kind of make us wonder, what would it take to make you happy at work? Here's what you said on our Facebook page.
What would make me happy at work? Summer's off and solid maternity, paternity leave. Or since I work in the Silicon Valley, let us plebeians have access to all that bougie tech company workout centers, open bar hours, snack bars, fancy fine dining cafeterias, and starting wages of $85,000.
What would make me happy at work? Health insurance.
What would make me happy at work? A beer cart.
What would make me happy at work? Forget happy. How about trying not to piss me off?
There's more, I'm sure. Take a second. Tell us what would make you happy at work. We're on Facebook and on Twitter as well. Coming up, why bad pop music goes hand in hand with a down economy.
Those songs are classic bubblegum pop. People want to temporarily live in a world where you don't have to worry about where the next rent check is going to come from.
But first, let's do the numbers. The markets heaved a big sigh today, not of relief, sadly, after a Federal Reserve member said the bank's new stimulus program is unlikely to boost the economy. The Dow Industrials fell 101 points, 0.75%, finished at 13,457, the blue chips did. The NASDAQ slid 43 points, 1.33%, 3117 is the number. The S&P 500 off 15 points, 1%, 1441 at the bell. Tesla Motors' sleek electric cars are known for their acceleration, but a financial speed bump put Tesla stock in reverse on this Tuesday. Shares backed up nearly 10%. The company announced it was behind in producing its new sedan, reducing revenue forecasts. Commodities like corn are on the way up in price, but commodities you don't eat, like coal and iron ore, are down because of the slowing global economy. That's gloomy news for Caterpillar, which makes equipment used in mining. The company lowered its profit forecast for 2015, that is 3 years hence. Caterpillar stock dumped more than 4% today, and you are listening to Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at Marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at Marketplace.org/the Big Book.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. It's a big day for construction. The Commerce Department will release new home sales for the month of August. We'll also get quarterly earnings from concrete supplier Texas Industries. And on this day in 1960, presidential candidates John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon squared off in the first televised presidential debate. The debates for this election cycle start next Wednesday. I'm Bridget Bodner.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Okay, so this next item is one of those stories that make you shake your head and say, man, you learn something new every single day. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has today's indicator that the global economy is only getting more global. China and your fruit bowl this time.
A lot of things probably come to mind when you think about China. Apples probably aren't one of them. But maybe they should be. China grows about 8 times as many apples as the U.S., and they're pretty commonly used to make the apple juice we slurp down.
The bulk of it comes from China.
Carol Freisinger is executive director of the Juice Products Association.
Most of the apples that are grown in the United States are grown for the fresh market. People like to eat fresh apples.
Now, more wealthier Chinese workers are acquiring that same taste for crunchy, sour, sweet. And all that chomping is pushing up the price of apples in China. Desmond O'Rourke is a fruit market analyst and head of Belrose Inc.
The fresh marketers in China are able to bid much higher prices now for the raw materials.
Which means that there are fewer apple juice apples that cost more.
Five or six years ago, the average ton of apple juice leaving China was selling for $300 a ton. Now it's selling for almost $1,000 a ton.
Hello, higher prices at the grocery store. Now, with price jumps like that, you know traders are going to want in on the action. In August, the Minneapolis Grain Exchange launched an apple juice concentrate futures contract, giving real apple investors something to sink their teeth into. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
The 22-member Arab Monetary Fund said today it's going to give Morocco a $127 million loan. That'll keep food prices down and help maintain political stability, at least in the short term. King Mohammed survived the Arab Spring last year. And even though there are calls for reform now, a lot of Moroccans are pinning their hopes for the future on the possibility that the king may just give them a business. Mary Stuckey reports from Rabat.
This is Latifa Rafet, one of Morocco's most famous singers. Her YouTube clip got almost 1 million hits, but Rafet is not just a singer. She also owns a bus company, a gift from the king. The bus runs a coastal route from Casablanca to the resort town of Essaouira. Rafet is just one of almost 4,000 Moroccans who were given transportation companies, actors, singers, athletes, and Friends of the King got licenses to run transportation businesses. But it's not just famous Moroccans who want the king to give them the gift of a business. Here in the ancient marketplace in Rabat, Morocco's capital, 30-year-old Rashid sells compact discs. He says he's dreaming of a gift from the king.
I want a license. Why not? I hope to get one. It's a dream. I wish I would meet the king and he would give me 3 or 4 licenses.
In fact, some Moroccans make a habit of throwing handwritten letters at the king during royal processions, begging him for gifts. 45-year-old Kamal says he tried that, so far without success.
You should try. You may find the king in a good mood. Maybe when you give him the letter, he will give you money or a job.
But is this any way to run an economy? Naji Baxby says no. The Moroccan economist says a king handing out businesses as gifts is something you might have found way back in the Middle Ages.
The king controls everything. This isn't a democracy. So before any economic reforms in agriculture, industry, or taxation, there need to be political reforms to evolve toward a true parliamentary monarchy.
Morocco did hold democratic elections last fall, which put a moderate Islamist government in place. But the king still holds absolute power. Still, there are people in the new government who want to see more economic transparency. The new transportation minister, Abdelaziz Raba, says that's why he released the list of Moroccans who'd received bus companies as gifts from the king. The Moroccan economist Axby says this move toward transparency is not likely to make much difference. Moroccans still dream of the gift of a business from the king, from famous singers like Latifa Raffet to the poor vendors selling CDs in the ancient Medina. In Rabat, Morocco, I'm Mary Stuckey for Marketplace.
Movies have them, of course. Television shows have them. Elevators have them, for crying out loud. I'm talking soundtracks here. For those who perpetually have headphones on, pretty much everything has a soundtrack. So is it possible that the economy has a soundtrack, too? Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith explores what we listen to in bad times and good.
When it comes to the music we want to listen to, is it the economy, stupid? Aram Sinreich is a media professor at Rutgers University. He says, yes.
Music has always been a method that people use to make sense of their environments and that societies use to kind of develop a collective identity.
To get a feeling of our collective identity now, I checked out some pop hits. I'm out of pain. So, we're making sense of our economic environment by calling boys? Not exactly, says Sinreich.
Those songs are classic bubblegum pop. When it's almost like the role that the movies played during the Great Depression, where people want to temporarily live in a world where you don't have to worry about where the next rent check is going to come from.
Or where your next bottle of Cristal is coming from. Mark Richardson is the editor-in-chief of Pitchfork, an online music magazine. He says he's seen a lot of music celebrating luxury and excess, like Watch the Throne, the hit album from Kanye West and Jay-Z. Everything's for sale, got 5
passports, I'm never going to jail. That album was very much about living an excessive lifestyle, and people kind of reveled in the fantasy of that.
Another recent trend influenced by the economy, electronica-style dance music moving into the mainstream. Alexandra Smith is the director of consumer trends at market research company Mintel. She points to bands like Skrillex, Lady Gaga, and Robin. I'm just gonna dance
all night. It is put your headphones on, tune the world out. It tends to be really upbeat, and that really makes sense when times are tough that people are going to turn to that kind of music.
I keep dancing.
Smith says when economic times are good, we often gravitate toward more soulful, introspective music. There was a spike in popularity of the emotional, melodic emo bands 10 years ago and the singer-songwriter boom during the prosperous late 90s.
Music that makes us think a little bit more. The Ani DiFranco, the Sarah McLachlan, the Alanis Morissette. Thank you.
Smith points out we're seeing many of these acts making a comeback. Alanis Morissette, Cat Power, and Fiona Apple have all released albums this year. Morissette's debuted at number 5 on the Billboard chart. Fiona Apple debuted at number 3.
It does maybe suggest that we're ready to start listening to more thoughtful music again and kind of move away from the pure escapism.
Smith says we may feel like the economy's turning a corner, so we're ready to stop shutting the world out and face the music. That's where the pain comes in. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace. Trying to fit beneath the skin, I can't fit the feelings in. No, every single night's a lie. Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, it's not just our fearless director, Millie Jefferson, who's had enough of the NFL officials' lockout. After speaking at the United Nations today, President Obama took a second to weigh in. He called the call on the non-touchdown last night terrible. That's a quote. The NFL, by the way, put out a statement today that said the game result is final. No appeals, no nothing. We are final, too. That's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow off 101 points, 0.75%, 13,457. The NASDAQ off 43 points, 1.3%, 3117. The S&P 500 down 15 points, 1%, 1441. Thanks to Sean Bowditch, Mary Dew, and Justin Ho on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by John Haas and Rod Abid. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.